Good morning and welcome to the September 19th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating in today's meeting and remind you to silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. And thanks to Randy for leading us off with that earlier. For those attending electronically, please would appreciate it if you mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session with a study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and our afternoon business session scheduled to begin at 1 p.m. However, our agenda, we may be sailing through that today, so we may conclude some business agenda items this morning. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after items that are presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or to ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided in the business session of our meeting this afternoon. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically, signaling that you wish to speak. If we don't see you on the screen, alert to us, wave at us, do something to let us know to recognize you. When we do recognize you, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Wahlquist, and Clerk of the Board Rebecca Newman. Would you please join Kevin Tooney?
Tony,
in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for welcoming me to the Commissioners' Meeting for a Safety Minute. My name is Kevin Tooney. I'm the Rock Island Maintenance Superintendent. I've been with the district for a little over 4 years now. And the safety moment for today is deer season and wildlife on the roads. With hunting season here and migration patterns, felt that this one would be fitting. Each year, nearly 1.5 million vehicles will collide with a deer, resulting in 150-plus motorist deaths, thousands of injuries, and over $1 billion in property damage. Spring and fall are the seasons of greatest risk due to deer migration during this time. Please drive with extra caution in the coming months and keep the following tips in mind. Slow down and use extra precaution in areas marked with deer crossing signs. These were put up because of the number of past deer car accidents in that area. Since deers are creatures of habit, more encounters can be expected where you find these signs. Stay especially alert at dusk and dawn, since early morning and early evening are the times of greatest deer activity. Also, just like us, deer do most of their roaming when the weather is nice, so use even more caution on pleasant days. Use your high beams whenever possible during hours of darkness so that you can spot deer sooner. This will give you more time to slow down. Remember, if you see one, you can expect others since they typically travel in packs. Make some noise instead of counting on your headlights to stop a deer. Your vehicle's headlamps can actually make a deer think it's safe to cross the road because there's light. If you see or even suspect deer activity, lean on your horn as you pass the area. I know I've done that one myself, and it seems to be fairly effective. Plan your escape in the event a deer does dart out in front of you. Is there room to drive around the deer and still stay on your side of the road? If a collision is imminent, it is generally better to hit the deer than to swerve and possibly lose control of your car and hit a tree or oncoming traffic. Of every 5 people who die from an encounter with a deer, 4 were killed taking evasive action. Finally, if you have young drivers in the family, please take time to review these hazards and tips with them. Here at Rock Island, we have one area that is particularly of importance, and that's for those people that come to work on the Chelan County side. We do have a herd of elk that will migrate across the road, And it seems like each year or every other year, there seems to be a vehicle elk encounter. One thing that could be particularly dangerous with elk or even with moose is that they're a little bit taller, so they can actually come through the windshield. I had the privilege of working at a hydro facility in TransAlta in Canada for 6 years before coming to the district, and we did have a rather high moose population there with a 45-minute commute to the Brazeau hydro facility for myself. So elk and moose, so if you live in areas where there are elk and moose populations, definitely a good idea to use a little more caution there. Once again, thank you for allowing me to do the safety moment today.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. Great timing. I think I just read something in the paper this last weekend about the economics and the savings of animal passages that are being installed around the Pacific Northwest and how much money. Somebody at a local university just did a study on that. It's a staggering amount of money that's lost. So anyway, great safety minute, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Quick comment. Kevin, I know you're Rock Island, but this past weekend on Facebook, a friend of mine posted he came by Rocky Reach to a herd of 50 longhorn sheep on the road.
Oh, yeah.
So, we've got all kinds of wildlife that we can avoid. So
yeah, between sheep and rocks in that area. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks.
Okay. Commissioners, staff are recommending moving resolution 13 to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such request or additions to the agenda? Okay, agenda stands, including item 13 to the consent agenda. All right. So, Kirk, I'm going to turn this over to you. We're ready okay. for number three.
Great. Agenda item number three, I'd like to invite Suzanne Grizel and Tracy Yunt up. I know you've all heard an awful lot in the news about the Inflation Reduction Act, and there, I think it's 273 pages long, and so...
Oh, no, much more.
And, well, much more.
She's only read it twice. She knows.
Suzanne and Tracy have both been... working really hard trying to understand exactly what's in there and what applies to us, and just know that that work is still underway. But we thought it'd be an appropriate time to have them come and give us an update of what they've learned thus far.
All right, thank you. Tracy Hunt with External Affairs.
And Suzanne Grizel, Senior Policy Advisor with External Affairs.
So we did talk about a presentation to the board a few weeks ago, and we're really glad that we've held off. We continue to learn more and more. This is complicated, and there's a lot of information. Associations continue to look at this, and we get different and sometimes conflicting interpretations of what this does or doesn't do. So this is a point in time. We're still learning, and there is going to be more information coming, the rules, you know, how this is going to be implemented. So We'll keep you abreast of anything that changes. Yeah, but today, there we go. Maybe left and right.
Up and down, page up, page down.
There we go. We're there. We'll be jumping around from slide to slide. One thing that strikes me on this is how this really does have a potential to impact what we've been hearing Kirk talk about, volume and velocity of change for the entire industry. So we're going to talk about some things today about hydropower opportunities and tax incentives, but there's also things Suzanne's going to cover that are impacting other energy sources that will change our energy sector. So this is a large portion of money, large sum of money coming into not only directly impacting us from energy production, but also things related to permitting, siting, approvals, government engagement, making things in theory, improving some processes. So it is another element that's going to change kind of how we operate within the energy sector. And then we're going to come into some next steps. And I should mention, there are some time-sensitive decisions that people, entities are going to need to make relative to investments. Investment constraints, we'll talk about this a little bit, are going to change over time. So there is a little time sensitivity for some of the things that Suzanne's going to cover. You know, I wonder, is this even on? Yep, okay. There we go.
There we go. So as much as I would like to go through the over 700 pages of the legislation, I am going to focus on the big picture. We're going to talk about the $369 billion investment for energy and climate. And this is generally broken down into energy fuels and tax incentives, which is the portion that's of particular interest to public power right now. There's also the transmission development, a lot of federal support for transmission expansion. The regulatory and permitting processes piece is interesting. There's hundreds of millions of dollars going in to support the agencies that we generally interact with regard to permitting. And then also a lot of dollars going into local and regional greenhouse gas reduction efforts, conservation, ecosystem restoration that may interact with other federal funding that we've seen coming out of the government last year with the infrastructure law. So all that together, we'll kind of see how that interacts with things that are of interest to us, but also our stakeholders. And then just as a picture, looking at with energy industry overall, there are new fees for methane. So that's going to affect the natural gas industry. There's also increases to oil and gas royalties, but there's also an interesting agreements out there related to federal leases for energy development, both for oil and gas and also renewables and offshore wind. Oops, so that skipped a little ahead too far. All right. So this is the exciting part for public power. After years and years of working on this issue, the so-called direct pay goal has been achieved. This is essentially a direct payment from the federal government when public power utilities or some tax-exempt entities actually make eligible investments in clean energy. So public power is now for the first time eligible for many existing and new tax incentives. Examples are new renewable energy, carbon capture, storage, there's a whole list. Also of interest to many of you who have worked on this issue, it is protected from sequestration cuts. So this is something that was discouraging about the Build America bonds, where there were basically automatic cuts to federal mandatory spending for deficit reduction that affected the BABs. This program is protected from sequestration cuts.
Suzanne, just those that may listen to this recording, that direct pay goal, which I was actively engaged in, what a lot of people don't understand is why that was so important is private power companies operate on a for-profit basis. And the way to get tax incentives historically has been you can take it off of your tax bill. And publics don't have a profit and therefore don't have a tax bill. It automatically puts publics at a disadvantage to the private. So that I just wanted to reinforce for maybe even some in this room that weren't aware of why the direct pay is so important.
So. Right. Definitely. That was helpful context.
Yeah, this thing is not.
Is the keyboard not working?
No.
There we go.
Okay. So one of the most important areas for us, obviously, is the treatment of incremental hydropower. There were a lot of wins for hydropower in this legislation. It extends the production tax credit for incremental hydropower. It also increases this production tax credit from what has traditionally been about half the amount of what wind received. So this is a big deal for developers in particular, but also for anyone who's doing incremental hydropower. It also extends the option to select the investment tax credit instead of the production tax credit, which in many cases can be much more beneficial if you're adding a lot of expensive property that will result in an efficiency increase. And then post-2024 through 2032, hydropower is eligible for a new type of credit, which is sort of a technology-neutral, emissions-free credit.
I'll let you try to get the next part. I'm not going to touch the mouse. You go for it.
It reminds me of when my son gets a hold of it and makes the sensitivity way too intense.
Use the right click, not the wheel.
Okay.
Right, the left click. I'm sorry. The other side.
Oh, there we go. Okay, just a quick refresher. Incremental hydropower, we've talked about this for a long time. The most simple way for me to remember it, it's more power with the same amount of water. More efficiency through turbines, things like that. So we spent a long time working to define incremental hydropower, and that definition is what they're using. So here's a little bit more percentage average, you know, over with the additions or capacity changes at existing dams. But that's essentially what to remember. It's more power with the same amount of water. There's a lag.
I should just let you do this, Tracy.
It's more fun to watch you do it. Yeah, there's such a lag, it doesn't.
Which slide are you trying to get to?
Seven.
There we
go.
Thank you.
Okay. Also, when the money started flowing from the federal government through the state, we also developed a federal funding program several months ago to make sure that we understand what requirements there were for different types of grants and monies that might be coming. So this $368 billion is no exception. We're going to be using our existing federal funding program, looking at things like prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirements that correlate to the size of the credit. Also, there are domestic content requirements, and they do change over time. This gets back to some of our decision-making. When we make decisions earlier, there are less requirements. Later, there are more requirements. But I wanted to let you know we do have a process in place and a team looking at these. We better understand sooner in the process what the constraints are if we do decide to take some of these federal funds or grants.
Okay, so just reemphasizing what Tracy covered, there are eligibility windows and time constraints. The amount of the payment can depend on investment decisions being made in the short term and also on like prevailing wage and domestic content requirements that may be, you know, five times greater, for example, meeting certain certain standards. So something to keep in mind. The direct pay opportunity starts in tax year 2023. So that's important for public power to realize. And then there are fewest requirements for projects starting construction before 2024. There's a little bit of a gap in the window there for the domestic content piece and giving time for some rules and regulations to be developed. We are also waiting kind of with bated breath on some of this additional guidance from the IRS, particularly with how currently tax-exempt entities would, you know, file and what that would look like and what kind of information would be needed so that we can access the credits. Okay, so we've identified a number of next steps. We are recommending that we take a look at all of our existing projects for eligibility, and this is not just hydropower, for example. There could be a variety of other things that the district may want to look at in terms of taking advantage of some tax credits that we're newly eligible for. And then we're going to have to compare this opportunity, which is definitely a good opportunity, with some of the other benefits in the infrastructure law. from last year. So some of them kind of cross over a little bit. So we'll want to see when we want to use the tax incentive versus other federal funding opportunity potential. We're going to be monitoring the IRS for additional guidance, which may take a while. And then there's some interesting things to think about in the long term. When there is a transition to that tech neutral credit that I mentioned, we'll want to be working with agencies in our trade associations just to make sure that hydropower continues to be fully eligible as the rules are written for that. And then just looking out, considering the effects on energy markets, it's a big deal for everybody in the industry, fossil fuel, natural gas. A lot of these credits, too, are, you would expect them to work one way, but there's a lot of conditions and things that will have an impact. And so I think it's a little unclear on exactly how it's all going to be rolling out and what the most major effects are going to be. And then there are also a lot of credits for individual credits for our customers as well. So looking at those and making sure that people are aware of those extensions and additional benefits would be helpful. And then just continuing to monitor how all of the additional funding for like the GHG or greenhouse gas programs and ecosystem programs will affect and impact us and our stakeholders in various forums. So, a lot going on. Questions?
Yeah. The thought just occurred to me, I haven't paid that close attention to some of the big picture items. Is it possible that as we are in a position of constructing new substations here in Chelan County under the direct pay option that something might become available?
I'll definitely take a look and see if there's a whole list of credits. I don't remember seeing one related to substations in particular, but there is federal funding available for a variety of infrastructure programs related to transmission. So there could be something there that's of interest for resiliency and redundancy. So we're going to be taking a look at all these opportunities as potential projects and investments come up.
Would something also perhaps be with transportation, electric vehicle charging?
Right. That's one of the ones we were just looking at today, that there is, we are eligible now for the advanced vehicle fuel charging station credit. So we'll be taking a look at that. Of course, there's restrictions. Some of it's related to geography, so we'll have to make sure we're eligible. But those are things that we're all going to try to be making sure that we're communicating well enough internally so that people know that these opportunities are out there and that we're also hearing what's being done on the operations side so that we can make that connection. So,
Gary?
Thank you. Great presentation. We were just discussing this at Waputa, and one of the comments that was made is that since transformers are made outside of the United States, adhering to the Made in America rule, that portion of the funding on this would be almost impossible. But I see that there's some deadlines that 2023-2024 that perhaps would allow you to take delivery of a transformer made in China or somewhere else and still be eligible for funding. Is that correct?
Right. There's a window of time for where you don't have to meet the domestic content requirement, which is in the very short term. But there are also exceptions. So if you can demonstrate that, it raises the cost a certain amount or that it's just not available in the U.S., then waivers can be applied for. So we're obviously looking really carefully at what that waiver process is going to look like. I would assume in that case we would be working with our trade associations because everyone's going to have the same problem. But we're definitely looking at it. And the agencies know that as well. So they are really drinking out of a fire hose as well on this. So, but yes, the waiver process is a question that continually comes up.
Great.
Yeah, they've a couple different agencies we've talked to on other funding processes. They've described it as, they're building the airplane at the same time they're flying it. So they're working through a lot of these specific issues. And when they've been very receptive and open to our input, and this would be an example of, I think, one thing that we would have to talk to them about.
Good. Thank you.
All right.
Sure.
Tracy and Suzanne, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Question, please.
Oh, Dennis. Sorry. Will.
Yeah. Is there any indication of any incentive for increasing our fleet of electric vehicles.
I have the list here. Hold on. Let me look at the list of credits. There's quite a long list.
As you might imagine, Suzanne has put together a very extensive list that also is going to be going to the senior team that has a lot more detail. So she's got it all prepared for them.
So there is a commercial clean vehicles credit. I'll have to take a look exactly at what that would mean for us. It's definitely on my list to look at closer. There's a clean fuel production credit. So those are things. There's also a clean hydrogen production credit. So those are all things that we'll be taking a look at in detail to see whether they fit well with the programs that we're taking next steps on.
Yeah, because it hasn't penciled out well before, but with an incentive, it might.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe worth looking at.
Okay.
Thank you. Ben. Do we have any other questions from anybody online? Okay. I am not seeing anything. All right. Thank you very much. Next, we have Ron Slabaugh here to talk about the Peshawson Water System acquisition update. Morning, Ron.
Morning.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. There we go. I should just be able to hit the left mouse button, correct? We'll go. We'll roll with that. I did it, and it worked. Well, good morning, everyone. Ron Slabaugh, Water and Wastewater Manager. We're here today to provide an update on our progress in the Peshawson Water District acquisition. You may recall our last update was in May of this year. No action requested today, just an update. Seek your feedback, and we'll go over next steps. Progress to date. We have requested and received all the as-built documentation for that system. For us to own and operate it, of course, we have to have all the records that are available. We did go ahead and send our surveyor out there and survey the entire system so we could bring it into our GIS database and have accurate mapping. And that's important to accurately complete a land rights analysis, which is making sure that all the land rights exist for those facilities. Fortunately, the majority of the system is within public right-of-way, and Peshawson Water District does have a franchise agreement with Chelan County. There are the reservoirs and pump station or well sites, and there are we have found land rights for those as well. Still need to finish up that analysis now that the mapping is complete, but it's well on its way. We've developed an interim and a final plan for meter reading and billing. This is important. Peshawson Water District has different meters and a different billing system than what we do. We put some thought into it, and it just doesn't seem for the short period of time that we had transitioned from Peshawson Water District ownership to PUD ownership for us to try to utilize that system. So what we'll do is just have them to continue to read meters and bill in the transitional period while we get it moved over to our meter reading and billing system. We've been working on the purchase and sale agreement. It covers all the details, of course, terms and conditions of the transaction. We have put together this capital improvement plan. Several of these items are identified within the Peshawson Water District's comprehensive plan. There's a few that we have added that have done or in the process of doing for our own system. So it's just to bring those systems up to a similar level. You see here there's about $3.1 million worth of improvement spread out over these half a dozen projects. Water rights, this is probably one of the bigger, more important items that comes up when we're talking about these acquisitions, particularly amongst our member PUDs of Waputa. Fortunately, Peshawson Water District is pretty strong in water rights. There's two consumptive rights totaling 407 acre feet. And for reference, their current use, they're about a 50 million gallon per year utility. That's about 155 acre feet per year. It's a little bit over a third of what they're authorized to withdraw. Good news. Those rights are in good standing with Ecology. The Peshawson Water District recently requested and received approval from the Department of Ecology for an extension to their development schedule. The only thing that's missing, we're unable to locate the documentation that actually transfers the ownership of those rights from the previous owners, which were the fruit packers to the Peshawson Water District. But we've reached out to the fruit packers, and I have had a discussion with one of them, Bluebird. We're in the process of preparing deeds that will transfer that right to Peshawson. And then, of course, upon our acquiring the system, Peshawson would transfer those to us. Financial analysis?
Let me ask a question.
Yes.
New development going in Peshawson will require water. And when you look at the acre feet, et cetera, will that new development be included in the numbers you just presented, or will those be added to the numbers that you just presented?
Good question. That would be added to the numbers that I presented. The 155 acre feet that we see there is just the existing residential and non-residential customers.
Do we know the demand from the new development?
We do. I don't have it on the top of my head, but I am certain that it would be considerably less than that what's available, that 407 acre feet.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. We've completed our financial analysis. I just want to remind the guiding philosophy from years ago, back when we first received the request, was that the acquisition be financially neutral to existing PUD ratepayers. Important item to note, the Peshawson Water District in 2021 implemented a multi-year rate increase of 4% increases through 2031. When we look at the rate analysis of what a typical residential customer would pay under existing 2022 PUD rates compared to Peshawson Water District rates, they're paying about $5 a month more under Peshawson Water District rates.
Currently?
In 2022, correct. And the Peshawson Water District residential customers on average use about the same amount of water as PUD customers do in a typical month. It's right around 6,000 gallons, a little bit more. And the rate for that's a little bit over $50, the actual monthly rate, with, again, theirs being about $5 a month higher. When we look at acquiring that system and transitioning to PUD rates, because we don't want to maintain separate rates within the system, that creates its own set of complexities, and we've been clear about that all along. Just to keep things easy to explain, understand, to administer, we utilize PUD rates with an adder, as necessarily we'll discuss here in just a bit. But with PUD rates and looking at the costs of that Peshawson system, the PUD rates would cover operating expenses and their debt service. They do have a fair amount more debt service per customer than we do on three loans with an outstanding balance combined of about $1.1 to $1.2 million. But fortunately, the revenue, again, under PUD rates would cover all that. But that capital plan that you saw in the previous slide, that would require some additional debt service. And since our initial discussions with the Peshawson Water District, we identified that we would implement a rate adder to recover that cost. To establish an upper bound, we just used our current internal loan terms, which are 4.1% interest in 20 years. And with those, each million borrowed would add debt service equivalent to about $12 per month to the typical residential rate. But for that $3.1 million identified, that would add about $38 per month to the typical residential bill. Now, as I mentioned, that establishes the upper bound, because in reality, we will apply for, to the best of our ability, the feasible grant funding. And through Washington Department of Health in the past, there's been system acquisition funding. The most common paid for, it was roughly 50% grant for eligible capital expenses. There's been other programs too. It just depends on the year, and there's different programs that come up with different terms year by year. But we will commit to go after everything that's feasible, similar to what we did with our Dryden Peshawson wastewater facilities. With that, there was a $1 million grant, that Commerce grant. You've heard some activity about that on Dryden wastewater earlier this year. We had also helped the Peshawson Water District apply for and tentatively qualify for $1 million Commerce grant. It was identified for that new well. But we're going to choose not to take that grant due to just the overall cost that it adds to the project and the overall administrative requirements. And again, you might recall in for the Dryden Wastewater Project, I believe we advised the board in June of 2022 in a higher level of detail the reasons that we weren't going to be taking that particular funding package. Next steps, this is a fairly high level, a more coordinated outreach with the Peshastin Water District. In 2019, the Peshastin Water District held three public meetings. I attended all three of those. Commissioner McKenna attended one of them. And they had two more virtual meetings in 2021. And overall, there is strong community support for this acquisition from the residents and also the two fruit packers. We're going to need to continue to put together that purchase and sale agreement and overall closing documentation. It's similar to purchasing a house, but a little bit more complex with a few more steps. This year, our goal is to come back to the board with a resolution authorizing signature execution of that purchase and sale agreement. And then in 2023, there'll be this transitional period where we're transitioning into taking on more of the roles to own, operate that system, and the Peshastin Water District is transitioning out. We don't have an exact date right now of when they would turn the keys over to us, but we're confident it would be sometime in 2023. Any questions?
Randy.
Yeah, good presentation, Ron, and it's good to see it's moving forward. One thing that I didn't see in here, just in terms of context, what's the average current monthly bill at Peshastin right now, if there is such a thing?
Sure. When we look at that 6,000 gallons or so that the average residential customer uses, it's going to be in the around $55.
So if they, worst case scenario, if all of the capital improvements had to be added, that there would be a $38 adder. That's worst case.
Correct.
Okay.
But yeah, worst case based on that, the assumptions that we have here, yeah, have those particular costs that are identified and the current internal loan terms.
It's good to know those parameters. It's very, I mean, everybody wants their eyes wide open. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Gary.
Good presentation. Thank you. So last week at Wuputa, there was some discussion amongst the water folks that they're encountering rebuilds, the pipe that has been in the ground for 40 to 60 years now, and they're having to replace this pipe. I was shocked at the cost of having to dig up and replace pipe. Do we know the age of the infrastructure, the pipe in the ground, for Peshastin?
Yeah, we do. Fortunately, with Peshastin Water District, they've been pretty responsible with their system planning, their engineering. They've utilized RH2 Engineering, who you've heard. We utilize them for several of our water system planning and design projects as well. The distribution system itself, the majority of it was replaced in the early 2000s with a good standard, very similar to the standard that we, City of Wenatchee, East Wenatchee Water District, utilize in terms of pipe and services and hydrants and such. So the majority of it's just roughly 20 years and has a lot of useful life left. Two of their reservoirs were constructed in the 80s, I believe, and the third large one was constructed in 2015. They have another smaller one, 90s, I believe. And they still have quite a bit of useful life left in them. They're in good condition. The biggest deficiency is that well, and that's something that's been talked about. They've known it for quite some time. And we're going to need to find a good location and drill another well to replace the existing two primary production wells that they have.
Great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions for Ron? All right.
Thank you much. Good.
Thanks, Ron. Good update.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. Let's move on to item 5, pole attachment agreements. Celia, welcome.
Good morning. Celia Slotta, pole attachment program manager. Thank you and good morning.
If you want to try to keyboard the page up and down, it should work.
I'll take your word for it. I'll go back to the mouth. All right. Today, I want to provide you with some information about the pole attachment program and some new licensing agreements that we have in place. Work. You just have to wait. So the definition of a pole attachment is a third-party licensee or Chelan County PUD fiber communications attachment to a district pole. Right now we have PUD fiber attached to our poles as well as these seven licensees. And right now that the seven licensees in the PUD fiber are the only attachment, the only attachers to our poles, but we don't get very many other attachment requests coming from other companies, but that might change. Today I'm going to provide you with some agreement background and history and how we developed the licensing agreements and background on that, provide you with some details about the new fees associated with the agreements, and we'll go over some next steps moving forward with the program. No action is requested today. This is an information-only presentation. Some history here, pole attachments over the years here at the district. In 1973, the district went into contract with GTE, the phone company at the time, into a joint use of poles contract that provided for the PUD to use GTE's poles for contacting and GTE to use the PUD poles for contacting to avoid duplicate infrastructure in the right-of-ways. From the time of 1988 to 2005, those six additional licensees contracts were executed. It's important to note that after those agreements have not been modernized since 2005, which is why we are introducing some new agreements at this time. In 2015, an internal audit of pole attachments program was completed, and a couple of recommendations were made. One was to look at the pole contact rates, and the other was to look at the pole contact agreements. As I noted, those agreements were not modernized since 2005. Several years were spent developing some programs and processes, and in 2019, the increased pole contact rates were introduced and approved and finally implemented with the licensees. And today, here we are. We've got some modern agreements and associated fees that I'd like to share with you, and we would like to then introduce those to the licensees. Once again, we had that 2015 internal audit. It generated a report with some recommendations. And from that report, staff decided that it would be good to create a pole attachment program to address those recommendations. And those items in that pole attachment program were elevated to the district performance plan. Since then, a multi-year team effort has been developed to implement those processes and program functions to protect our wood assets. Recently, we have undergone an inventory of pole attachments, licensee attachments to our wood poles, and we have been able to recoup pole attachment, those pole contact rates, the new rates, recoup the costs of those attachments to our poles, and those items are going well. The new licensing agreement that is ready to be rolled out is based on a model American Public Power Association best practice agreement. So our objective with the new agreement was to provide a framework for the PUD to balance the desire of the licensees wanting to attach to our poles with our safety, low-risk environment of safety and We want to maintain a cost-neutral program and continue to provide our excellent customer service. We developed the new modern agreement, like I said, using the American Public Power Association model agreement as a baseline. We incorporated some of the terms and conditions that we felt were important to the district, and we defined processes in the agreements for the licensees to attach to our poles. No, I'm not seeing it there. It blanked out on the iPad. Oh, you're going to drive for me? Can we go back to slide 5? On the next slide, which we'll get to in a moment, we'll go over some of the fees that are associated with the new agreement. And these fees were researched and calculated associated with the processes that the pole attachment program has for licensees attaching to our poles. We did engage internal stakeholders and departments in developing this new agreement and the fees. We had a review process, solicited input, and had asked for approval for those different terms and conditions before we rolled this out. Ready? Yeah. Thank you. This slide shows the new application fees. There's a couple of different fee structures. The first is if the licensees provide us the engineering, or I should say the first one is if the district provides the engineering for poles in which they want to attach to. For each pole that it's attached to, we must engineer that to make sure that it's meeting the National Electric Safety Code standards for attachment to it. So the fee above is a little bit more than the fee below, which is a case where the applicant would provide that engineering and provide it to us. These fees were based on the average cost of staff time to process these applications. We took a sample of the last 2 years' applications and developed this average of staff time and engineering time to come up with these rates. A couple other rates, or fees rather, that are included in the agreements are suggested by the American Public Power Association model, and they're generally adopted by other utilities. There's an unauthorized attachment fee, which provides us the ability to charge a licensee if they did not apply for the attachment to a pole and did not go through the application process for attachment. The second is a popular fee in my mind. It's a failure to timely transfer or remove facilities poles or fees. So this fee is gives us leverage to be able to go back to the licensees if they haven't transferred their equipment to a new district pole. So we're attempting to eliminate some of the double poles, the pole stubs that are out in the system. This next slide gives us an overview of some of the pole attachment application fees around the state compared to other utilities. Most, if not all, other utilities are charging these pole attachment application fees. The district to date has not charged application fees, and we're feeling like we need to recoup those costs and to keep the program cost neutral. The application fees shown here are a flat rate for application fees only, and some of the other utilities, such as ours, the proposed rates add an additional per pole rate depending on how many poles are included in the application. So our next steps are to initiate the agreement document overview with the existing attachment licensees. We will continue to train and affected internal staff and departments to support the new functions of the program. Some of that's already been happening, and we'll continue to do that so that everyone's up to speed on what happens when we roll out these documents. Hopefully, we'll execute these agreements with the licensees after a review period, which I'm hoping will be by the end of the year. It might be wishful thinking, but that's my goal. And after that, we'll implement these new processes and procedures, including the fee collection. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, Randy.
Celia, welcome. We haven't met before. Andrew and John can probably share with you that I've bugged them off and on over the years about stubbed off poles and double poles. So it's really great to see that that's part of your presentation, that you're going to be dealing with that. So that's good. But what I'm really wondering, however, is did they share with you that by virtue of you taking on this role, you become the poster child for everything our competitors really find irritating at our utility? I've been a commissioner now for about 16 years. And ever since I became a commissioner, pole attachments have been a constant topic of conversation at the state PUD associations. Mm-hmm. And at the federal level, they've been a constant topic. Mm-hmm. So welcome to the never-ending conversation.
Thank you.
So I just thought I'd share that with you and say thank you for addressing the double pole.
You're very welcome.
Okay, any other questions?
I would just add that this has been a long time coming. Thanks to Celia for getting it here to where we're taking the next step. And it's from a public standpoint, this is a really important program. And a lot of utilities don't put the emphasis and focus on it that Celia is putting on it. And it's one of those things where you have public infrastructure and you're allowing other companies to use the infrastructure. And if you don't have a program, or if you have staff that's trying to do this in their spare time, it's hard to have a good program, and it's hard to provide customer service to those other entities that want to attach to the poles, and it's hard for us to do what we need to do to represent the public's interest in making sure those poles are safe with all the infrastructure on them. So this gives me a lot of comfort knowing that we've got Celia, and before her we had Katie, that have really built this program with Andy Wendell and others supporting it to where it's a program we can feel really good about. So I appreciate her effort and the team's effort on this.
I'm shocked that we have seven different people attaching to our poll, seven different entities. Mind-boggling.
She might say that we know of.
Right, that we know of. And three of them are really main attachers, and the handful of others are just have a few attachments. So that's probably why you don't think of it as there being seven, because we're not seeing seven attachments to each pole. But
I've got some pictures from Asia that have.
Yeah. I've seen some of that.
I know what it can look like.
So. That's what we're trying to avoid, right?
Yeah. It could all be done with one. We know that.
Right.
Gary.
I want to say thank you. This has been a multi-year conversation, and at many levels, as Randy pointed out, at the State Association, it's a hot topic. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised if they reach out and ask you to come talk to them, because this is something that we're all trying to find our way forward in the dark. Mm-hmm. So, excellent presentation. But I will share with you that 2 years ago, I had a conversation with Senator Cantwell's staff in D.C. on this very topic, and they had tremendous interest on pole attachments. So this is a topic that goes all the way to Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and I'm just doing backflips over how great of a job you guys have done. Everyone who has touched us, Andy and everyone, Katie and yourself. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and I appreciate all the support I've gotten from our supervisors and management. It's been great to be able to roll this forward, the program and the agreements, and I'm excited to move on with this and have some structure around what we're doing. So
great.
Any other comments or questions, Priscilla? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Celia.
Okay. And Michelle, I'd like to welcome you. It's great to have you here at each one of our meetings, continuing this discussion. So I really did want to take this opportunity to just say, you know, every meeting we've been asking you to come here and keep us updated and informed, and this is important to all of us. And so I just wanted to say thank you for that effort. So,
well, it's my pleasure, and hopefully you're not tired of seeing me. but I did want to take a minute. I don't have any visuals for you today other than, I guess, my presence here. Really just wanted to give you an update that we're continuing to coordinate with the city. We're working on drafting terms for an agreement for the land exchange necessary for them to pursue their Confluence Parkway project. So we're close. We're working back and forth with the city. We hope to bring some draft terms back to you in the form of a draft agreement in October, so not too far away. And just a reminder that the city has a revised schedule on their website now. They are planning to distribute the environmental assessment and the Section 4F documents mid-November. That will be a 30-day comment period in which SLAM PUD would be writing formal comments to both of those draft documents. And so we are starting to work on those as well. And we will make sure to bring those to you before we send them to the city. And they also are planning an open house and a hearing on those documents on December 6th. So that's their anticipated schedule. As that date becomes more certain, we'll be sure to bring that forward in future board meetings to make sure it's on your calendar. So that's all I had today, and entertaining any comments or questions that any of you might have.
Okay, do we have any questions or comments? Okay, Michelle, again, thank you very much for keeping us updated and continuing this work.
You bet. My pleasure. Thank you.
On behalf of our due diligence. All right. So at this time, do we have any public comment? Anybody from the public like to address the commission? Okay. Seeing none, look at my screen here. Do you see anything, Rebecca? Anybody trying to? Okay. We are an hour ahead of schedule, so we are going to continue to move forward and...
I think we have everybody available right now if you want to just keep moving in the agenda, or okay, unless you'd like to cover some manager items and commissioner items and then do the resolutions.
Commissioners, are you okay to just keep moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's keep plugging along.
Okay.
All right. So... All right, so we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda, including Resolution 13?
I would make such a motion.
Second that.
Okay. Commissioners, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is approved. All right, let's move on to our resolution number 10.
I'll go ahead and introduce this one. Agenda item 10 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 6 to service agreement SA number 18-152 with Conforth Consultants Incorporated to provide Rocky Reach East embankment analysis. And with us is Justin Fletcher online.
Good morning. So as Kirk mentioned, I'm presenting a resolution to authorize amendment number 6 to our Rocky Reach East Embankment Analysis Service Agreement with Cornforth Consultants for additional geotechnical analyses to respond to Federal Energy Regulatory Commission review comments on our Rocky Reach Geotechnical Investigation and Embankment Stability Analysis Report that we recently submitted to the FERC. Our initial contract with one fee amendment has brought the total contract value to $495,000. The fee amendment that we're bringing forward today will allow the consultant to fully execute or fully respond to comments that the FERC sent to us. So we've worked with Cornforth to develop a proposed plan and schedule to address the comments for an estimated fee of $28,000. And then we're including an additional $22,000 in the service agreement amendment in case there are additional comments from the FERC on the follow-up work that we're planning to perform. The amendment would bring the new contract total to $545,000. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, I do not see anybody raising their hand. I don't believe there's any questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thanks, Justin.
You're welcome.
Agenda item number 11 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 2 to lease agreement 22-12089 with the Port of Chelan County for the lease of Port Industrial Building number 5, otherwise known as IB5, located in Wenatchee, Washington. With us is Dan Frazier.
Thank you, Kirk. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. I'm here today to offer up a resolution which will add exercise a second amendment to the lease agreement with the Port of Chelan County. If you recall, IB5 building was initially obtained a portion of the building. The district initially moved our fiber group in and our meter group into the building along with the grounds maintenance and a small warehouse that supports those groups. Later, we amended that agreement to include additional square footage to bring on the project team that is building the service center. So we have our service center staff in terms of our project managers, construction managers. We have our architect, and then we have the contractors and the subcontractors, the primary subcontractors, all in the same building for the project. It was actually a way to create a collaborative team in one building and not create a trailer farm with a whole bunch of trailers on site. And it was actually a bit of a cost savings for the district because we would have paid for those trailers under the general conditions of the permit or of the contract. So with the initial resolution, the board approved the optional terms. Unfortunately, we've changed the terms of the contract such that it's a different contract now. So we need to come back to the board to have those extensions approved. The initial contract had 2 1-year extensions available to us. Well, we don't really need 2 years, but we do need greater than 1 year. So I was able to negotiate a 17-month extension with the port. It did kick in the CPI, which was contemplated in the original agreement. And that CPI was a staggering 19.43%, but it is 4 years of CPI. So unfortunately, when you hold a lease for a period of the flat lease rate for that term, you're responsible for the whole amount, which is typical. So, but we were able to negotiate if we do need to extend, well, when we go from the end of this 1 year term to the next 5 month term, we do have a cap of 3% on that should the inflation remain rampant the way it's been. So we were able to negotiate that. So I think overall it's a good solution for us. It's worked really well for the project team. We've had lots of meetings out there and it created such a collaborative environment. And one thing to note is that even with this substantial increase, we're still well under the Valley's rate for this kind of space, which is we're about 79 cents a square foot, and and the going rate is well over $1 a square foot in the valley. So we still have a good rate with the spaces we're using it.
Okay. Any questions? Questions for Dan? All right.
Thank
good
you.
Good picture in the paper the other day, by the way.
I won't say what I looked like, but I looked tired or something else. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
All right.
Agenda item number 12 is the resolution rescinding resolution numbers 11-13658 and 07-13090 to update and redefine the membership and responsibilities of the Power Risk Management Committee. And you might recall Jamie Mitchell, who's with us here today, was at the last board meeting introducing this topic. So, Jamie, welcome back.
Thank you. I thought today I would just briefly go over the two main changes just as a refresher. So the first one is a change in the membership of the committee. So our proposal is to swap out the managing director of district services with the managing director of customer utilities. And again, that is to bring in a new perspective around retail load, since we've had increasing load growth. And we don't necessarily have the need to have the communications perspective as much going forward due to the reasons why Kirk mentioned last time with the other methods the district uses to do outreach. So that was the first change. And then the second change is updating the charter. And this really is to refresh it and bring it current with what the PRMC is, Power Risk Management Committee is doing now. So it's still including what we've historically had as our charter, but just adding on to it to be more comprehensive and really reflect the duties that the PRMC is doing now. So those are the two main changes. If there are any questions, I can answer them.
Questions, comments, commissioners? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, at this time, before we move on to item 14, I'd like to go ahead and seek a motion for resolutions 10, 11, and 12.
I would move we approve resolutions 10, 11, and 12 as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Ann. Is there any comment or question on any of those before we move forward? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolutions 10, 11, and 12 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. All right. And we're going to go ahead and move into item 14.
Agenda item 14 is a follow-up from the last board meeting, as well as one that was earlier in the summer regarding the Climate Commitment Act forecast. And with us is Mike Bradshaw. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
So this is an action request. This is the third time we've come back. So back in July, we presented the first time an overview of what the Climate Commitment Act is. And then earlier this month, we presented a draft recommendation for a renewable supply forecast to be used in our template that will be submitted to the Department of Ecology for the no-cost allowance allocation and the cost burden calculation. And then today, we're asking to formally adopt that renewable supply forecast. So fairly small slide deck here, just a recap of what that looks like. So the recommendation is the same, recommending that the renewable supply forecast be an amount equal to 80% of the energy to serve load. And again, that will be used in the cost burden spreadsheet that will be submitted to the Department of Ecology here shortly. At the bottom, there's a snippet of just what that will look like, which is essentially that top row is 80% of the bottom row, which the bottom row is the district's load forecast. And with that, the action requested is to adopt a forecast that is equal to the 80% of demand.
Okay. Commissioners, comments or questions? Do I have a motion for approval?
I would move to adopt a Climate Commitment Act renewable energy supply forecast of 80% to serve Chelan PUD's load and to direct staff to use the adopted 80% renewable energy supply forecast related to the Climate Commitment Act.
And I would second that.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? There you go, Mike.
Great.
And
very much.
Now we get to see what their response to that motion, that approval is.
We will see.
Okay.
October 1st is the rule. Rule should be out, so we'll maybe have some insight then. We may not.
Okay.
But that's the next step.
Great. Okay. Thank you for keeping us informed on that and bringing us along.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, we're going to move into manager items. We're still doing great on our time.
Yeah, really good on our time. With us is Justin Erickson. He's got a couple of items to discuss. Recap of the Chelan River Whitewater boating event over the weekend, and then Riverfront Park open house. Justin?
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners. I'll start with the update on the whitewater rafting event, which was held just over the last couple of days. We did not have a significant turnout, but it was still, I think, a fun event for those that participated. Six boaters entered the water around 11 a.m. Saturday, and they were all out by 3:30 p.m. without incident or injury. Sunday morning, the second run occurred, also at 11 a.m., and we had four boaters participate in that event, or that segment, and they were all out of the water by 3 p.m., again, without incident. We did have a request as part of that effort on Sunday to increase the flows to 450 cubic feet per
increase
second.
The flow?
We did deny that request. There was quite a negotiation that occurred previously about the flows, and so...
was it a request or multiple requests?
I think it was a request.
Was it from the winner?
Not really sure. It's so we're going to engage with American Whitewater and between now and next year, and see if we need to have any additional conversations about that, because of course we don't want to be surprised on the day of the event and have a request such as that. So you know, we've got a process to evaluate that.
What was the flow?
Let's see. The flow was 400 CFS. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was 375 on Saturday. So they started a little lighter on Saturday, and the Sunday flow. So it was increased, just not as high as they apparently at least one wanted. So.
That's 400 higher than I would prefer.
We do have a few sort of lessons learned that I thought I'd share as well. So why was the participant load a little lighter this year? Well, we believe that many of the usual participants were up in Canada. Flows are still really good up in Canada. Lots of opportunities opportunities that were closed the last couple of years because of COVID. So we just think that participants were further north, and there's kind of a season, and they migrate south, and they didn't need to migrate south this year because there was so much opportunity up in Canada that they had to participate in. So we'll see what our numbers are like next year. Let's see. All boaters who participated in the 2022 release participated before. So we had no new boaters. So also kind of an interesting stat. And finally, the all-electronic sign-in and waiver form that we initiated worked very well, very easy for us to process and for the participants to utilize. So that worked well. We'll continue to use that next year. Any questions? All right.
Sounds like a good event.
Thank you.
I have a question. This is Ann.
Yes.
Justin. So I'm just curious, I haven't observed the event for years, but I'm just curious what our deputy's time involvement is for this weekend event, and what our cost is, what the cost is to the PUD. And I know that's difficult to determine. This is a license requirement, correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. And are we doing this two weekends?
Just a single weekend on 2 days.
1 weekend, 2 days?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, okay. And we had 6 participants.
Yes, and that is historically low. I think we've got the data, and I can be happy to share that. I think it ranges from approximately 20 to at most maybe 30 or 40 participants, I think was the highest number. But I think you have an excellent question about what does it take in terms of staff time and what's an estimated mm-hmm. cost. And I'd be happy to investigate that further and share that with the board along with the participant information that we have, the historical data.
That'd be great. Yep. I'd be interested for sure.
Okay. I'll get that, and I should be able to get that to you before the next meeting.
That'd be great. Thanks so much, Justin.
Thank you. All right. I'll switch gears now to the Riverfront Park open house that I mentioned 2 weeks ago. That event did occur last week. We had a couple of opportunities on both Tuesday and Wednesday. Unfortunately, because of the smoke, we did have to move it all indoors. We were always going to have a portion of it indoors, but we also thought it would be nice to have a couple of stations outside along the trail where we could interact with the public in the spaces that are going to be transformed by this project. That said, I don't think I think it was a successful event. We had about 80 people come through, and about 50 of those submitted comment cards that were evaluating with the team. We had 4 representatives from our consultant group, Greenworks. We had a number of PUD staff, and then a couple of city staff as well that interacted with the public and walked through the design alternatives. Of course, the most of the discussion centered around the splash pad. I know there's been a fair amount of interest from the board about that too. So I thought what I might do is just spend an extra couple of minutes talking through the 3 options to see if you had any questions or comments today, or as you reflect upon it, please feel free to send me your thoughts via email or give me a call. So the first design board that was presented relative to the splash pad area was this concept that's up on the screen now. This is a more open concept utilizing fountains, and it's sort of a different design than we have with the other splash pads that are in town or the new splash pad that's being constructed currently by the city of Wenatchee. Actually had a lot of positive comments and feedback on this because it is sort of different. The spray pattern can be augmented based on time, and you can have different sequences and there's kind of an element of spontaneity to it that people liked. There also was this the image on the lower left, you see seating. And so people thought, you know what, this could be utilized when the splash pad isn't operating. You could have performances, sort of theatrical events. You could maybe even make it even more conducive to such activity when people are not actively on the splash pad. So I thought that was some really interesting feedback. On the other hand, it's very open. It's very there's a lot of hardscape with the concrete, and there's not a lot of shade. And so, with any of these designs, there's sort of pros and cons. And so that was some of the feedback that we got from on this particular design. I'll go through all 3 of these, and then I'll pause for questions or comments, if that's okay. The second design was a play on the historical on the history of this area in close proximity to this exact location where the Columbia and Okanagan Steamship Company operated from 1892 to 1914. There's actually a plaque out there, and it's referred to as Stern Wheeler Park. And so it's this area where these steamships were built and launched and operated between Wenatchee and Brewster, about 70 river miles And so this, not everyone knows about that history, and so this is a way to incorporate some history and fun into the splash pad. And so this is a bit more of a traditional design, right, where you have spray features, features that spray in different directions, and it's more colorful. On the same token, that may not be as appropriate for an urban setting along the riverfront. And so some people, I would say this is probably sort of the third option, the third choice, based on the feedback that we've received so far. And then the final design is one that takes its cues from the river. So it's sinuous like a river. Even crosses one of the secondary trails. It has a natural look and feel. It, like the Sternwheeler, you could incorporate an educational component about the river, about ecology, about cultural history, etc. There's also some potential use outside of, when the splash pad is not being utilized. So on the second option with the Sternwheeler, probably, when that's got a fence around it, when it's not splash pad season, it's probably going to be locked and not really accessible. This, like the first option, you could have, you can incorporate a design, design features that allow it to be used during other times of the year and for other events. At the same time, there's some challenges. This is might be difficult to maintain. It's difficult to sort of provide a fence or kind of keep the kids corralled, if you will. So you could have some conflict with the trail users. And you actually do have a trail crossing right through the middle of it. So pros and cons with this one as well. And so, as I mentioned, there's overall, I think the first and third options were the ones that the public was most supportive of. We've even had some very initial discussion with the project team about, is there a way to maybe incorporate a hybrid version where you've got something like a portion of where you've got, you can integrate a river feature like this and also have sort of that amphitheater option with the first visual and provide maybe a little bit of both. So I'll be curious to see what the architects come up with. And I'm confident we've got a great creative team and they'll take the feedback that we receive and come up with the best option. But there are definitely many compelling solutions here. So
that's the plan, is to get this feedback, let the architects go back, redesign, come back.
Yes.
So it's more of a listening, learning, adapting, redesigning versus a vote on three.
Yes, I agree. And this is because there's so much nuance involved with all of these, it really lends itself to an open house. So that's why we had the open houses, because just throwing these pictures out there and saying pick one doesn't work as well, because you want to have that narration with the public and have an opportunity to explain it in greater detail. So, and absolutely, we'll be working with the architects. Coming back to the board as we hopefully narrow on a preferred option and get additional feedback. We'll be doing the same thing through the city's process, and they have a park board. And so hopefully in the next several weeks, we'll solidify on a preferred path and get concurrence from everyone and be able to move into final design.
Great. Questions or comments, commissioners?
The comment I would make is, immediately when you started talking about the one that had the historical influence, thought, this is it, this is it. And I guess I'm showing my age or something to that effect. But I figured Dennis would support that too as a former history teacher. But it'll be interesting to see how this evolves going on. But I just thought I would share that, and this probably pulled it out of my commission items, but it fits right here. When Commissioner McKenna asked me to give the Chelan report at the round table on Wednesday last week, I highlighted our activities. Most utilities highlight, rate increases and this and that and everything else. I said, well, we're having public input on what our splash pad should look like and how the pickleball courts are going to be managed. and actually had people wanting to come move to Chelan County. So I don't know that this is something that we ought to really understand is very special for what we've been able to do here in Chelan County, and be really respectful of it, because not many utilities get to do what we're doing.
Well said. I believe Commissioner Congdon had a comment.
Yeah.
Anne, go ahead.
So as a former biology teacher, I'll have to throw my support in there for option number three. I love the natural look and feel of that. I love the you know, the rocks and the natural the way that, you know, it mimics the way the river flows. But yeah, combining one and three might be a really good compromise, although that leaves out number two, doesn't it, guys? So this should be interesting. How are we going to make this decision, Justin? What kind of influence do we have as commissioners?
Well, I think we have a great influence. This has been a partnership with the city of Wenatchee, but we are sort of taking the lead on this. You know, we anticipate carrying out the construction activity, having our staff manage the project through completion. Certainly want to be respectful of our partners. But I think you've got a big weight in what we decide. So again, I'm hopeful that we can find a hybrid that incorporates enough of what everybody likes, so that we're all satisfied. But it is your other option is to build multiple splash pads too.
Well, Justin, I really go ahead, Anne.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, Bill, yeah, one for Anne, one for
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, but I would love to see you come back to us again with some potential hybrid designs.
That sounds great. And, you know, we've got some time here, so if we need to go back to the public again, well, we can do that. I think we really want to get this right, and I'm sensing that from you too. So we'll make sure that we do.
Thank you, Justin.
I really like and appreciate the effort going into presenting various ideas and engaging the community to get their feedback, listen to our customer owners, get their ideas, and give us feedback, and let the pros go back to work and see what else they can design. So I'm excited to see what else they come up with. Dennis.
Yeah. Regarding three splash pads, it only took 9 years to get one. So we're 27 years out of it. We've been that bad. I kind of like the combination of one and three. One looks more like an adult area, not so kiddish, but it's for kids. The other thing is it's multi-purpose. And so if you can incorporate kind of the stream concept and an opportunity to educate people otherwise, I think it's a win-win. So, yeah, and I really like the steamboat thing. But anyway, it's just, you build a pad, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Okay.
Yeah.
Justin, thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate the feedback.
Yeah.
Commission items?
Are we done with
manager items? Done with
manager items. I'm just looking at you.
Yep, thank you.
Commission items. Commissioners, do any of you have anything you'd like to share at this point?
Could I add on to what I started with the PUD Association meetings last week? Last week was standard meetings, except there was the past president's dinner on Thursday evening, which Commissioner Arsenault is currently the president, so he was the MC of that event. But one of the things that hit me in that sequence, and I don't think it's ever happened before in terms of the state association, is that at this moment in time, we have at Chelan PUD three current or past association presidents. And I don't think that's ever happened in the history of the association for that to happen at one moment in time. So I just take my hat off to my fellow commissioners for their commitment to the state association and what it means to us here in Chelan County. Because it means, you know, we engage a lot, and I think it comes back and pays huge dividends here in Chelan County. And I know our staff has committed a lot of time and effort. They watch what we do and say, well, we probably should engage with the association more. If we weren't engaged, maybe they might not as much. But I think it's strengthened all public power in the state of Washington, our engagement, and it's paid us dividends. Mm-hmm. So just my big thank you to my fellow commissioners.
Appreciate that, Randy. Okay, do we have anything else, commissioners? We're moving on. Okay, follow-up on delegation of action items from prior board meetings.
We don't have any new items from prior board meetings. On item number 18, we do have a couple of new ones from today. The first one, Suzanne Grizel will research whether the direct pay applies to a substation project. And then Justin's going to look at the PUD cost to run the whitewater boating event and circle back with the board. Mm-hmm. Those are the two new ones we gathered.
Okay. At this time, I will open it up to any additional public comment. And I'm looking online. Do we have anybody seeking to address the commissioners? Okay. So at this time, Kirk, we should probably go ahead and recess and then go right into executive session.
We could do either one. We've got we could start and recess at noon, or we could just start at one, whatever your preference.
Why don't we start?
Okay. Commissioners, are you okay to start on executive session, and then we'll take a recess for lunch? Okay. So at this time, we will recess into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110, to consider the selection of a site or acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase, when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price, as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. To consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of decreased price, as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. And to review the performance of a public employee, as authorized by RCW 42.30.110, we will be in executive session for 60 minutes. Is that still on order?
Accurate, yeah. Okay. Hopefully.
We are recessed for executive session. We will take a 5-minute break, and we will begin. Coming out of executive session, no decisions are made, votes are taken. We will be recessing for our lunch until 1 p.m. We are coming out of executive session. No decisions were made, no votes were taken. It is now 1:30. Meeting is adjourned.